When we think about how we move around a city, what do we value? The efficiency in getting from A to B, the options that are available to us. And when we assess these options, we might not even consider accessibility to be important unless we recently sprained an ankle and have to account for a pair of crutches, or maybe we have a physical or mental disability. The ability to access an option that suits our specific needs best is really the first hurdle. To provide greater access for all of us, transportation designers have to widen their scope with a more empathetic lens with greater inclusivity in mind, and this requires user involvement from the start. In many ways, the challenges of moving people from A to B in a city are similar to those in a factory, where you want to efficiently move products on a production line from point A to B, especially when you consider how factories and our city streets are becoming more and more automated. Today's guest has unique insight into designing transportation that is more inclusive for everyone and how this design insight can be applied to the factory floor. Welcome to the Future Car Podcast. I'm your host, Ed Bernardin, VP of Strategic Automotive Initiatives at Siemens Digital Industries Software. In my career, I originally worked in the area of manufacturing and design, and a few years back, when starting to get involved in autonomous vehicles, I went to an individual that I knew was experienced in the area. He told me that in many ways, you can think of city streets to be much like a factory, but instead of moving parts around to different factory workstations, we're moving people and packages around from place to place. There's a lot of commonalities between what happens on the automated factory floor and what happens with autonomous vehicles on city streets. So today, we're going to explore some of the commonalities and differences and the role of technologies like virtual reality and artificial intelligence in both autonomous vehicles and in factories. We're very fortunate to have someone with us that's experienced in both these areas, Sophia Lewandowski. I originally met Sophia when she worked at the company HFM, where she was designing autonomous vehicles and making them better suited for the disabled. And now she works at FactoryPal, where they're looking to digitize the factory floor. So with experience in both these areas, she is the perfect person to help us explore these commonalities and differences. In part one, we discuss her work with autonomous vehicles. And in part two, we will follow her on her path at FactoryPal to optimization of factories. Sophia, welcome to the Future Car Podcast.
Hello, Edward. Thanks for having me.
You've studied economics. You have degrees in transportation interior design, interaction, and user experience design. And you applied this originally at HFM to helping people with disabilities gain better access to mobility with autonomous vehicles. What inspired you to go in that direction?
That time, as I had to start with my master's thesis in Detroit, actually, I was looking for a unique topic, but I already knew that I wanted to work on autonomous vehicles. I wondered, what are they good for? What problem will they solve? Will they have a positive impact on our society? The answer for me was that AVs will enable people to do something they weren't able to do before. So basically barrier-free traveling, access to transportation. In the US, at one of the Unreal Engine meetups, I met Ray Smith, a person in a wheelchair, and he was looking for some developers at this meetup. I saw him and I saw the chance, actually, and asked him for his opinion on my concept, on my master's thesis. We became friends after some time. He gave me regularly his feedback, and he inspired me to do more out of my thesis. And I saw the real need that autonomous transportation can solve many problems of people with mobility challenges. That's why I was inspired by him and then started to look for my future after my graduation for the similar direction.
So your inspiration came from actually working with someone that could benefit from autonomous vehicle technology. And you brought virtual reality in to help you in the design process. When did you recognize or feel that virtual reality could play a part in designing and helping autonomous vehicles help people with disabilities?
As I started working on AV interior concepts, still during my university time, for disabled people and tested them with users, I realized we as designers, we don't emphasize enough. We design basically for ourselves and not for people with mobility challenges or for any other users. It's really difficult to put ourselves in their shoes. I showed my users from rehabilitation center, so basically people with mobility challenges, my interior concepts and as sketches first. Then I also showed them my ideas as 3D models. I figured out that the designs weren't satisfying for them. They always criticized something on my packages because I couldn't understand exactly what they feel and what they need. So I designed, for example, handles for them to leave themselves in the vehicle and transform themselves to the comfortable chair, to the comfortable seat in the car. But there was something that couldn't work for them because they just don't have enough power in their hands. So I thought VR could give actually those people an opportunity to virtually build their custom interiors that would help them to slide from their wheelchair to a seat. They could test the proximity of objects, place remote controls around them, how they wish it to be, and really try out things, put them around in the car and create their own package they really need that I cannot create for them because I just don't know what really is the need of them. And every person with a mobility challenge, they really have completely different challenges, let's say. Some of them, they have wheelchairs, electric wheelchairs, big wheelchairs. They need more space. Some of them, they have manual wheelchairs and they also have other needs. Some of them don't have hands and maybe need some supportive tools in the car. So basically, I created for them an environment to be creative and supported them. So I didn't say you are the designer and you design now, but I supported them by creating this virtual environment to create their space. I didn't create a product for them, but I created an environment to create.
So every designer or engineer has the challenge of having empathy with their customer, for the person they're designing the product for. It sounds like what you did is you flip things a bit and you actually made your customer the designer.
Right. So I enabled them to actually be creative and put things around as they wanted, as they needed, and not just giving them a finished product that actually doesn't work for them.
And virtual reality obviously played a big role in this, so they could see that environment before it actually existed in a way.
Right. So we would avoid any additional effort. Let's say we wouldn't need to build any clay models, any, let's say, prototypes, physical prototypes to test. Virtual reality feels real. So you are in there, you test the proximity, you can grab things, you can really see how big is the environment. And I think it's very helpful and it saves a lot of effort and time to test before the production, before the first prototypes.
Now, when we first met, you were working for a company called HFM. What does HFM stand for?
HFM is a German name, Hanseatische Fahrzeugmanufaktur.
Now you know why I didn't try and pronounce it.
That's why there's a great abbreviation.
Can you translate? What does that stand for, HFM?
Hanseatische Fahrzeugmanufaktur. So it's a car manufacturing or vehicle manufacturing company based in Holm, so one of the cities in Germany.
What's the goal of HFM?
HFM actually created a modular vehicle platform called MotionBoard with integrated steer-by-wire and open interfaces to integrate any components. On top of the MotionBoard, any kind of cabins could be placed. Integrated steer-by-wire from Schaeffler-Paravan enables any kind of inputs to steer the vehicle. Physical inputs to steer the vehicle can be sent by conventional steering wheel, joystick, head movements, anything would be possible. So basically, you can see it as a platform with the cabin on top. This platform is not just electric, modular, and connected, but is also accessible. So this is something where we discuss with our customers. If they wish the platform to be accessible, it can be accessible because we can integrate, or the company can integrate any components to the platform. It's completely self-created. Even the vehicle control unit has a self-written software. So we basically, or the company can basically integrate anything that customer wishes to have in the vehicle.
Now, is this primarily an autonomous vehicle or can it be both?
It can be both. The platform can be steered by wire. And steering by wire means that we could have physical inputs. As I said, with the conventional steering wheel, it's possible to steer the vehicle with joystick, with any kinds of inputs. There are a lot of different ideas what can be used, like the user can, for example, blow in the tube and in this way could apply brakes and accelerate or turn the head to the right and left, and the sensors would catch the head movement and also steer to the right to the left, which would be good to for disabled people or people with mobility challenges. But it also can be autonomous or highly automated. We say highly automated by integrating the sensors and the autonomous software. So the company doesn't create the software, autonomous software for that. For example, there was another company, IBO, but it can be any other companies as well to create the software. So basically we integrate components and it can be highly automated, but it also can be manual auto steered.
So what was your role at HFM in the design area?
As I started at HFM, I created AV interiors because that was my degree for my bachelor's. I was working on concepts for interior, so cabins that go on top. These for different use cases, different users, different customers. In the next step, I created web pages, brochures for the company, posters for exhibitions, and kind of stopped doing too much design work, but it was kind of everything in the company. So outreach, I started traveling to conferences. I gave talks at universities, meetups, summits. I reached out to state representatives, especially in the U.S., I joined delegation trips to China, pitched company to investors.
So there's the motion board, which is underneath, and that has everything that drives the vehicle, many of the control systems related to that. You could plug in through your, as you were calling it, drive-by-wire to do the steering, the starting, the stopping, whatever it might be. But then you have this cabin that goes on the top. And so suddenly, especially if it's, let's say it's an autonomous vehicle, you're not so worried anymore about the actual driver, but you can now start to create whatever environment you want in this cabin. Can you tell us a little bit about when someone looks to get one of these vehicles, what do they look for in an autonomous vehicle when it comes to the interior? What's the variety, the different types of things that you encountered in the design of these interiors?
So there were completely different use cases that we looked at. We had different customers or potential customers also who had different ideas of how to use these cabins, how to use these autonomous or highly automated vehicles. We always started with the use cases. So what is the goal of the trip? What is the route that will be covered? Who will be the user? And what will they try to accomplish these users?
What were some of the unique use cases that came about?
So we were working with actually a city project that we conceptualized one interior where the seniors were transported from senior apartment buildings to downtown area and to grocery shops, and we were brought back. So basically the routine wasn't a long one, just a couple of kilometers, a couple of miles. In this use case, we knew that the seniors probably will have walking aid. They would need space for a dog, place for grocery bags, guiding rails would be necessary to integrate in the vehicle, big letters on displays, analog and simplified design. So this is something that we had to consider by designing this concept for this project.
Any other examples?
If I think about another concept where we worked with the university, also the idea was to transport students on the campus. The shuttle would just run around the campus, and on the shuttle, there would be four students, let's say, with software background, and they would code something on the vehicle for autonomous vehicle, and the supervisor would sit on the bench behind them. So basically for this interior, we would need a table and four chairs with a socket, wireless charging for their phones, because we are talking here about young generation. They always have their phones with them. And this is a completely different interior now compared to the interior for the seniors who would go for shopping to the downtown area.
You know, it's interesting when you think about design. If you have unlimited capability to go anywhere with a design, you would think, oh, that makes it a lot easier. But that can also make it a lot harder, because now you have to figure out in what direction to go and what you need to do. So for instance, here you said the seniors, they needed room for their grocery bags. The students wanted a table where they could sit around and talk and collaborate. How do you go about figuring out in an efficient way what you really need in that interior? Do they always know what they want, or do you have to help them figure it out?
We also figured out that the users don't always know what they want. There are two use cases. If you talk to the customer, they have a general idea of who should be on board and what route should be actually covered. But what the users and the end users would need, that would be interesting to figure out with the users themselves, not with the customer. So that's where we had to actually ideate first what these users could need, and then talk to the users. Let's say in the university, there could be the students, or we would talk to figure out what do they usually have with them? What do they need for coding anything on board of such a shuttle? What else would they want to see in the vehicle? So it's basically always talking to the customer first and getting the requirements, because they always know what basic requirements they would need. And then talking to the user and figuring out what the user actually needs on the shuttle.
It's a lot different than buying a car when you say, I want this option or that option. It's more figuring out what a user needs rather than necessarily what they say they want. There's a difference between those two, it seems like. Now, when you do this for someone with disabilities, how does this design process change?
Yeah, when disabled are involved, we still start from the beginning. We need to figure out what is the use case, where does the person go, and what will this person try to accomplish. Will it be always a business trip on a specific route? Will it be a pleasure trip, or will they also be just shopping somewhere downtown? So the technology would enable the access to the vehicle that HFM has. For example, automatically deploying ramp would help to get them on board. Air suspension is also available in the platform. It would lower down the vehicle to also enable these people to get on board easily. Rails would be necessary, for example, special interior package with enough space to maneuver around in the vehicle. If they are in a wheelchair, then we need to think what wheelchairs will be on board, electric big ones or manual ones, which are smaller ones. Also seat belts to fix the wheelchair automatically. It would all need to be considered in these cases. And I'm here only talking actually about people with mobility challenges, but there are many more disabilities. For example, blind people can be on board, people with other challenges. So we always need to know who will be the target group.
Every one of these customers may have somewhat unique characteristics that you're going to have to work with. Maybe it's the level of disability or the type. It seems that that's where virtual reality comes in to help you come up with the solution that they truly need. So can you tell us a little bit, some specific examples of how you use virtual reality in these kinds of situations?
Yeah, at HFM, so basically I was working at the university first on my thesis, and there I used VR really to let people create their environments. At HFM, VR enabled us to demonstrate different AV concepts at exhibitions, conferences, summits, of how different interiors would look like. Disabled people could look inside and judge the experience by commenting and suggesting any improvements.
Would you start with a specific design and say, hey, let's start here? Or is it more of a blank sheet where they might pick things from menus and say, hey, put a chair over here and a screen over there? How do you start?
I think it would be very challenging to put a person in a really empty room in virtual reality and give them the opportunity to use all the possible furniture pieces, because then you start from scratch and not everyone feels comfortable to jump into the role of a designer. That's why it's good to have some samples. So in virtual reality, we presented, for example, three different samples of how this interior might look like for disabled people. And then there was an opportunity to actually play around and change some of the objects, the places of some of the objects. Let's say they would remove the chair from one position to another. They would maybe adjust the height of the seat and so on. So basically starting from samples, from existing examples in VR, and then kind of redesigning whatever we already were thinking about.
Is it more things like we could lift the level of the seat that they're trying to move into? Is it that in addition, say, to, oh, I would like to place this hand strap in this location, or I'd like to have a screen over there, or, oh, I'd prefer a leather interior versus a cloth one? What's the range of choices? It seems like there could be so many here.
The leather and all the other options that you can have in a conventional vehicle, we didn't really demonstrate. It was more about placement of objects, let's say recreating the package so that it's convenient for the person in a wheelchair, and also changing the, let's say, they could just move object and adjust the seat height so that we know what is more convenient to them. And it was not that much about little details. This is something that we would already discuss with the, let's say, customers and end users, but not on these exhibitions where it's all about demonstrating that it's possible to recreate and really create a custom experience in the vehicle.
You know, you create it virtually, you do it with virtual reality, but then ultimately you create the actual hardware itself, the actual vehicle. I would imagine there isn't always a perfect match. There are going to be some differences. Have your customers ever noticed any particular differences? Do the types of differences stay the same? Or how close does virtual reality actually get to what you ultimately create in hardware?
Yeah, so if you create a 3D object, we used to work also with a seat company who created the seats, and we placed basically the same seats in the car as we developed further. We just took the objects that the customer wanted to have and asked for the suppliers if they can give us a 3D model or try to recreate it ourselves so that it's close to the reality. And then, of course, as let's say, we didn't that time produce the seats and all the other components. Of course, we outsourced all that. And before integrating in the vehicle, we showed actually the components that we ordered to the customer, if that would be actually what the customer imagines it to be.
Sophia, thank you so much for speaking with me on the Future Car Podcast. That concludes part one of our discussion on design for mobility. And in 2 weeks, we will get together again and talk about Sophia's work on the future of factory design. We will explore some of the similarities and differences and the role of technologies like virtual reality and AI in both autonomous vehicles and on the factory floor. And of course, as always, a big thank you to all our listeners. So until next time, I'm Ed Bernardin, and this has been the Future Car Podcast.